If we start a group here, it will be patterned after Mr. Adamski's work and these teachings that the brothers are giving him. We have, three little booklets at the moment, which after a while Mr. Adamski is planning to put into one book. This is Telepathy, the Language of the Universe. It's a basic understanding of yourself, what makes you tick, why we're here, and I found it very helpful in the short time that I've been using it. And we will use this material, the cosmic philosophy. I don't know whether all of you have seen this or not. We have a few of them left here. They're not available in the bookstores. You have to send to California to get it from Mr. Adamski. So we brought some with us in case anyone would like to have one. Then currently, Mr. Adamski has a series of 12 lessons going called Science of Light. This would probably be the name of our group, a Science of Life study group. And this is, you start with the telepathy booklets, go into the cosmic philosophy, and then the Science of Life is a still deeper phase of this work. And it's pure science and truth. It has nothing to do with religion or metaphysics or occult things, anything of this nature that we most of us have studied into in varying degrees before. It's mostly just scientific fact. This is why it appeals to me. It's just plain common sense, and it fits together like pieces in a picture puzzle. And to me, it's just fantastic. I don't know how I ever lived without it, really. So I hope you will ask Mr. Adamski questions. I don't know what he's going to tell you. Sunday night when we had this meeting in Dorchester, I didn't know what he would say either, and I left him to say all of these things, and he didn't. So tonight I thought I would, and then people would understand more where they are to begin with, and you can fit in better what he's trying to tell you. And if you have any questions, I know he'll be glad to answer them.
Well, in the first place, the science of life. Life is scientific if you understand.
Would you wait just a minute, please, sir? I want to tell you about these things. Is there anyone who didn't get a biographical sketch in any of the other years? We have these here if you don't have them. There's also a few copies of a cosmic bulletin, which Mr. Adamski publishes, and which you can get by sending your name to him. It's on a voluntary basis. If you like it and are interested, you can share whatever amount you like to help pay for the cost of it. There's only three or four of these. These are all he had left when he finally arrived in Massachusetts. I don't know what the people are going to do where he goes from here. And then we have the Science of Life study course. This is a short description of what it covers, the chapters in the course is what comes every month and that sort of thing. As far as these go, you're welcome to have them. I think we should have enough. Some of the people in the group, I've mailed these out. We got them since we had the last meeting. So before you leave, or during the course of the evening, or where, come look them over if you like. I would appreciate it if these three bulletins you would leave so that people have a chance to look, at least until the meeting is over and you go home. Mr. Adamski's address is on this Science of Life sheet, and it's also on this biographical sketch. And anyone can write to me. I'll be glad to answer any questions I can or send you any information I have. If there's anyone here tonight whose name we don't have on our record, if you are someone who has phoned me, I know there was a group in Shrewsbury who called, and we'd like to have your name, if after this is over you're still interested, we'd like to have your name so that we can keep you in touch and tell you what goes on next.
Okay. We call it the science of life because life is scientific. In itself, even God is scientific, if you want to use the term, because we might say when you understand a thing, you can live it. And we might say once you understand science itself, then it's called applicable science because you apply it in your life. And philosophy, of course, is a foundation of science as well as all the faiths or religions. And philosophy lends itself into various fields of life. It's really the foundation of life out of which many things come forth. In other words, The foundation of life is like a trunk of a tree that later grows into various branches. We up to date have been studying the branches and never the trunk. We left the trunk to some hereafter that when we die maybe we'll be fine out somewhere else, is what the trunk of that tree is. And we named it God, Jehovah, and many other names. Now, what life is a whole, we might not know it as a whole either, because the label might not represent exactly what we want to bring forth. And we are living by labels most of the time for identification purposes. But life itself is both force and intelligence. For we know that matter or gases or anything of which forms are made are first in the invisible state and then solidify. I'll give you an example, for instance. You look into the sky like today was a clear sky. You didn't see anything up there. Yet there were gases up there, but you didn't see them. They were the invisible state. Well, suddenly they would form. They would slow their action up, and a white cloud would appear. Then you saw what you saw is an effect of a concrete effect, something that you call concrete. Up to that time, you didn't have nothing concrete until the cloud appeared. Now, if that cloud keeps appearing and reducing its activity more and more, it becomes a dark cloud, and it's a little bit more, you'll finally get some moisture out of it, and so down the line. Besides, it also gathers on energy, which we call static electricity. Of times, when they're loaded pretty well, they'll shoot that force out to another cloud. We call it lightning. Well, this all comes out of the invisible to visible state, and right before your eyes while you're watching goes back to the invisible. The cloud dissipates, another clear sky, you see nothing there. So you can see that life, in the field of abstract, is in the abstract state, as we call it abstract state, not the effective side. We have been studying the effects mostly and never gone down to the cause of it. And there is a cause for every manifestation. You might say there was a cause for the cloud to appear. And there was a cause also for the cloud to vanish again, become invisible. In other words, life works in a cycle right on through and produces various types of manifestations. Now the cloud that you might have saw today appearing in that way, you may never see it again because it'll never repeat itself in the same geometrical pattern. It'll be other clouds, but not the same one. And they keep on going there. There'll always constant newness going on in field of life, in the various manifestations. Now, we know that there's a force, because nothing cannot get together without something gathering it together. Then to form a form, like, for instance, we know form of a tree, form of a worm, form of a man, or anything like that. It calls for intelligence, some kind of an intelligence back of it. Well, we classify that as God. And some people classify Jehovah and various names given to it. Supreme Being, a Supreme Intelligence, a Cosmic Intelligence, all sorts of names were given to it. Everyone has a different label for it. But no one can deny the one thing, even a so-called an atheist can deny that there is power far greater than that of his own. I lectured one time in Garden Grove in California to a group of students of a state college. And one fellow says, well, I don't believe in none of that because I'm an atheist. I says, there's no such a thing as an atheist. And he disagreed with me. He said he was an atheist. I said, all right. Since we got into this hall here, a fog has settled down that I myself won't be able to get home tonight. I'll have to stay over because I wouldn't know where to drive, where to find the road. It's so heavy. Could cut it with a knife. Can you go out there and find your car? He says, no. Well, then you are admitting to me that you're subject unto another power. You're limited. If you weren't, you would be going down there and get the car and go home. And that alone is an admission that there's a greater power over man, governing man, without the Word of God, as we have been told, and that that great power is also an intelligent power, because it gathers things, puts it into form when a man does not know how to put it in form. For an example, you take yourself. Well, some of you are mothers, some of you are fathers. Is there any man in this world that really knows what is to take place when a lady conceives to be a mother, to be born a child, be it girl or be it boy, into the world? All she knows is that she's conceived and going to be a mother in time. But does she know anything about what to do about growing that seed into a form of a babe? Nothing. She doesn't know a thing about it. Not even as our science today. Yes, they're talking about having robots by putting a tape recording into an instrument and have that robot do things according to the tape recording as the tape recording has been made by somebody else. And they may do that, but they can never and never will put what we call the intelligence or the soul, as it is called, into any form that they might make, representing man. Yet we must admit that there is an intelligence operating within that mother that knows what to do, that finally the child is born into the world, which might be the son or daughter. And there's not a man on earth who knows anything about that, how that's to be done. There's evidence right there, whether you call it God or whatever you want to call it, that there is an intelligence beyond the point of a man's mind or a man's intelligence that is capable of doing a job that a man is not able to do himself. Even with the simple eating. You eat, you take the food down there. Your mind says you should eat because you're hungry. All right, you eat. But do you know what's going to happen with that food once you get down there in the stomach? So you forget all about it. You don't pay no attention to it. And yet there's a harmonious law involved there that if you're disturbed, terribly disturbed mentally, and you go and eat the best kind of food that may be placed before you, in that disturbed state of mind, I'll bet you in 20 minutes you'll be asking for soda. You'll have an indigestion. But you go and eat there in a happy-go-lucky state, you can eat even tender meat. You didn't know it probably, but you could eat it, and it wouldn't bother you. There's a law that is perfect, operating within you all the time. Even when you're sleeping, your mind, it might be said, is dead. Because if you're a hard sleeper, heavy sleeper, why, people could take you out of the room, walk out with you to bed and all, which are in another place, and you wouldn't know a thing about it. Next morning you wake up, you wonder how in the world you got into that place. You know, you remember you went to bed in one place and found yourself woken up in another place. Yet there is something taking care of your body all the time. But if it wasn't, your body would not wake up in the morning. It's these things. They're not metaphysical. They're not religious. They're just the law, actual fact, that you daily live with. But how much attention or thought you give to it? None. We have exalted the mind of everything in the world, but we have never given any thought to that which even created that mind. If we do, we always place it somewhere in the sky, somewhere in the heavens, so called, or somewhere in the God idea, or a supreme being, or a supreme intelligence, or divine state. Yet we must admit that even if there was that divine mind, which is that something that is already in you, that is responsible for creating that little son or a daughter that you may have as a mother or a father, or digesting your food, that something is already there. Well, we might say that that something, whatever you call it, if we use the word God, then whatever God created, it came out of his mind or his conscience and became a living form of what you call concrete. And that which came out of that mind must be equally as divine, if we use the word divine, as that divine creator was himself. Nothing less could come out of that mind, only that. So we are living as divine expression. And that divine expression still is within us, which we call life of ourselves, or the higher soul, some people call it. That very intelligence and power that motivates the body and also causes the mind to receive impressions and act upon them, because every word that I say or you will say must come by an impression to you. And then your mind recognizes it and give utterance to it in the form of sound. If you would not get that impression, you wouldn't know what to talk about. These are thoughts that are coming from the invisible and silent manner. And then you recognize them, and those that you like, according to your habits, you express them to convey it to the other fellow. Yet there is that universal language, just like universal music. You know, in music you have what you call so many notes, and they're all the same, whether to be Chinamen, German, French, American, Australian, Polak, or what? They all use the same notes but produce different melodies. Yet, no matter what kind of melodies of what nationality, you are touched by that harmony. It does something to you. Why? Because it is the original, the real thing. See? Something that's been before you came in, and then you are part of it, because that's something that is part of you, is in relationship with it, of the cosmic nature, which is also responsible for creating that son and daughter that you may have, or digesting that food of yours, or taking care of you at night when you're sleeping, because sleep really is actually death. You will witness no other way of death than that, unless you have probably been crippled up in accidents, something like that, you suffer then. But if you were to die right there in that sleep, that's the only way you would pass away, and you wouldn't know any difference. So you die every night anyway. You're hoping that you wake up in the morning, because it's customary, you got so many years to go on, and so it becomes customary to believe that you're going to wake up. But a lot of people haven't woken up in the morning. So you really are gambling, taking a chance when you go to bed and closing your eyes and your mind goes absolutely dead, that you'll wake up in the morning, and you do. And notice again, here, the last thoughts that you might have in going to sleep will be the first thoughts that you'll wake up with. It's like a alarm clock. But the consciousness, what we call consciousness, we have given very little thought to it, is the one that keeps operating your body and guarding your body and keep it going all night long. The blood pressure goes on long, and every bit of liquid in your body is moving on. The pulsation is going on just the same, whether you're asleep or not. Well, it shows here then that there is an intelligence independent of your mind, right there in your body, all the time, and is taking care of that body. And that intelligence that oft-time does warn you, we call hunches or premonitions, and all those kind of names have been given to those feelings that we get sometimes, don't do this, don't do that, or don't eat this, or don't eat that, or you're doing this or that wrong, or something like that. We know, don't pay any attention to that. That particular manifestation has been called in the early days a guarding angel. Well, that angel is really you. They're really you. Because because the mind and the body is nothing but effect of that real thing. Just the same, you see, before you can have a building, we say, or even a chair, what do? You make a blueprint. You got an impression what to do, you make a blueprint, draw it on a piece of paper. You still haven't got a concrete form. You just got an idea. And then you proceed to get the material necessary to build that building or build that chair. Then you got a concrete form. This is what a lot of people are asking for. Give me the concrete evidence. Well, what they're asking for is an effect. And they seldom go to the study of cause, and they never know what the cause of it was. And it's to the cause that we have to go. Now, if it wasn't for Marconi, Madame Curie, Einstein, Steinmetz, and all these fellas here, at one time were threatened to be thrown in the same asylum of the things they talked about, well, we wouldn't have the things that we got today. These men were abstract scientists. They went to the cause, and from the cause, worked towards the effect and produced the effect. Once they produced the effect, men had to acknowledge, but first conception wasn't the cause. Just the same thing as a child born that has been conception taking place as the cause. Well, you still haven't got a form, has not been born outside into the world as yet, but the cause is there. And eventually the effect will be brought forth. Then you've got a concrete form. You've got a concrete knowledge. Is a form been born out of that little seed? And so it is with all everything else. Everything comes out of the invisible and returns back to the invisible like that cloud. Life was on a cycle. Now, we got to classify intelligence then, and in order to know what we're talking about. We have a lot of the idea to be only passed on to human beings, that they're intelligent or non-intelligent. But everything that manifests is intelligent in its own field in a certain degree. You might say that a blade of grass is intelligent. I want to tell you something. In UCLA, in California, just a few years back, went down there and I was acquainted with quite a few professors there, and studying plants. And this was a geranium that they was using at this time. And you know, when we pinch ourselves or cut ourselves, immediately a certain amount of fever takes place in that cut. Immediately. Well, all right. You pinch a plant, slip off of a plant, you don't see that. You think it's a dead thing, but it's not. We had this little instrument which would show normal condition as well as fever. Well, the professor went to work and pinched it. Slip off of the geranium. First he put it in there, it was normal. You're like taking your own pulse or your temperature. Well, it was normal. He pinched it, and pinching is tearing it. It's not a clean cut, it's tearing it. So he pinched it. And because he pinched it, the thing quivered. Showed that as the life was going out of it, there where it was hurt, it was quivering just the same as you would be quivering. And acting, and the fever began to rise. He then took the plant out and took the slip and put the slip in there. And you've seen, probably, I don't know how many of you have seen that I have, seen it in the war and all of that, where the muscles begin to jerk once the body is dying, see? They begin to jerk by themselves. They're all together. So that kind of a jerking went on that little slip. The life was passing out of it. All right? Then he took another geranium, put it in, done the same thing, but this time he took a razor blade and he cut a slip off. There was a pain registered there and slight fever, but not as great as the one that the tissues were torn by pinching it off with fingernails, see? And the same reaction, but of a milder nature. Well, right there, immediately, little sap would come out of it and the healing would begin to take place where the injury took place, just the same as those on your hand. There's a form of intelligence right there taking care of the injury right there. It's the same with trees and everything else. So when we talk about intelligence, we have to then classify what we mean by intelligence. If a man come up here right now and has said, well, I'm so-and-so, he's well-dressed, he looks like $1 million, and he looks like he have just a stack of knowledge, we immediately get an impression from him that he's a very intelligent man. But once he opens his mouth and he starts talking, immediately we classify him. Is he intelligent, or is he a just good-looking man and puts on airs, and behind that is nothing but a moron? So we classify him immediately. If he expresses himself below our standard of thought, has nothing to give us, and we classify him as a moron. He doesn't know anything about what. Doesn't know as much as we do. Yet another man will come along and may be ragged and look like a tramp. And we classify him, well, that guy must have nothing. He's just a bum. Yet when he opens his mouth up, we all should get around and would listen to him for hours. See? So we classified these two people on the basis of expression. And if they was acting, producing something, we'd classify them the same way. This fella can produce it better than the other fella. So he's a little smarter or more intelligent, we say. Now, what is it in this world? Like a blade of grass, the tree, the plant life, the worm, even the minerals, and all of that. That is not expressing intelligence. Everything is expressing intelligence, because you take a blade of the grass that is formed, all right, it knows what it wants. We may give it too much fertilizer, we may give it too much anything, and kill it. But if we let it alone, or if we know exactly how much food it requires, we'll be doing it a lot of good, and if we let it alone, it'll do better sometimes than when we try to help it along. See? It knows just exactly what it wants. Everything in its field for which it was created. There's nothing. We couldn't live, really we couldn't live without the insects, without the worm, the ladybugs and things like that. Speaking of ladybugs, in California, a few years back, they wanted to get rid of the insect because it was injuring the orange trees and they weren't getting the crops they were getting. So they sprayed the trees and all of that with poison gases and so forth, fumigated them and all of that. With it, they killed off all the ladybugs. And then they didn't have no oranges. So they realized what they had done. So they got some ladybugs from the east and started promoting them. Today you can buy them by the pound, and they do. Buy them by the pound and turn them loose. And they got good oranges. In other words, everything is for a purpose. We are greedy people. Take it in nature's way. We are greedy people. We may say, man sows 50 acres of corn. This is a funny thing that we do sometimes, and we call ourselves very intelligent. I think we're kind of use that word intelligent, because instead of intelligent, we become greedy. And we hurt ourselves with greed. He sows 50 acres of corn. Well, if you're going to have good corn with a lot of vitamins necessary in that corn, well, somebody got to cultivate that corn and get it to a proper stage. And these little bugs and so on and so forth, they do their job. And for doing their job, they should be paid. So they eat some of the corn. And then the farmer doesn't get 50 acres of corn, he only gets 45 acres. He loses 5 acres to the bugs or the insects. So the farmer finally says, well, I got to save the other 5 acres. Maybe he gets $50 for the other 5 acres as a profit if he saves that other 5 acres. So he makes $50 a year more on that corn.
He goes to a chemist. He says, what can you do about it? Any way of getting these bugs? Well, I'll work with the idea and find out what we can come up with. So he finally gets this spray or liquid, and he says, you spray it with this, or mix it with water and spray it that way and so on, you'll get rid of the bugs. He does. And in the next crop, he's got full 50 acres. Corn looks fine. Everything looks fine. He gets it to the market, he sells it, and he makes the extra $50. But by God, he got a family of six kids and a wife and himself that's eight. Now he has to go to a drugstore and buy vitamins that used to get it from the corn, and it's going to cost him $250 a year now for vitamins to supply his family with. See? And that's the way we have been working all the time. All because we don't quite understand nature as we should. Everything is important or wouldn't be here. If the insects and things like that would not be here, we wouldn't be here. They do the job first, prepare everything, just like the earthworms. You can't get a very good flower or a very good production from the earth if it wasn't for the earthworms. And where there's no earthworms, they usually import them and put them into the ground so they'll work the soil and one thing another. Even gopher, as bad as he is sometimes, and chews up on your flower and pulls it in the hole, according to science today, he actually brings forth from a depth of 3 to 6 feet depth of the earth, he brings up on the average of 3 yards of dirt per year to the surface. Dirt that is really a virgin dirt down there. This one on top and been worked to death. And he was off 24 inches of teeth. Keeps wearing them off, grinding them off by digging. All these things are important, and you don't need to take this just because I said so. You can get books on it where it's been written, where science have proven these things and so forth. All of this was in these stages of action below us. Is expression of intelligence, because the gopher knows what he does, what he's to do, the worm knows what he's to do, the bee knows what it's to do, transplant pollen from one place to another, so we have proper production and vegetation or fruit and so forth. Everything is for the purpose, and they do express cosmic or universal God's intelligence, all in their own field. Just the same one note will not produce a melody, harmony all the way, but you use many notes or many keys on the piano or many instruments to produce a beautiful melody. Everyone fits in certain spot, and this is just like that. And every one of these are governed by the same law that you and I are governed by. We call life. And what is life? Well, if you become unconscious, you're no longer considered living. You're dead hombre, they bury you. But so long as you're conscious, you go on living and you express intelligence. Now, what is that conscience? Then why should we give some thought to it? Well, the conscience, you might say, is a life force coupled with intelligence. Is the little small voice in you that keeps telling your mind sometimes, don't do this or don't do that or do this or do that. A lot of people has classified that as coming from some entity, dead entity somewhere up there, a grandfather or somebody or some master that is now telling you what to do because he's on the other side of life. Is really yourself, the real true self, that's the eternal part of you, that is telling you that. The consciousness that is responsible for creation of your body and creation of your mind and the senses. Your mind is made up of the senses. Now we know that men have lost their minds. And so long as they are conscious, they might write something out for me. They might be blind, deaf, and dumb. They can write it out for me, and I can go ahead and do the job for them. They can build empires so long as they're conscious, but they can have a mind ever so great. In other words, they can have a mind developed so high that the high frequency that is now in this room, where TV set would produce it, if we had it, would pick it right out of the air and produce a picture on the screen. That they don't need the TV, they would see the picture. See? That high, because it was high enough in that frequency, and they would see the pictures without reducing that frequency down to our sight, where we have to have it reduced down to our sight so we can see it. We could hear the music that is here now in this room, and all of that, which is produced by people on the stage right here in the city, or maybe in New York, and transmitted this way, and all of that. If you had a mind like that, you'd be called superhuman being, and you can develop that kind of a mind. All you have to do is sensitize a little bit more, be able to go up and down the scale. You're like that cloud that can vanish or can become a concrete effect. Either way, you can do that with your mind. But if you did have that kind of a mind, and you lost consciousness, would it do you any good? No, you would be a dead hombre as we know you to be. You'd be a dead hombre. They'd be burying you. So you can't lose the mind and keep on living. But you cannot lose the consciousness and keep on living. So there's the major part of you. Yet it's the mind that we keep cultivating, we call it personality or the ego. We keep cultivating it and give very little thought to the consciousness. And the consciousness that is within you, that's why Jesus says, the kingdom of heaven is within you. In other words, God is not out there. He's living within you, and you are living within him all the time. Because this whole cosmic setup is, so to speak, if we use that word, and you are living within it. So you see, you don't have to search far, all you have to go search yourself. And the great book says, know thyself, you shall know all things. And if you know yourself with the consciousness, you're naturally going to know all things, because consciousness is the creator of all things. If you were not conscious, you couldn't have created this ashtray, that table, or anything like that. But because you are conscious, then you use your mind to get the material to create it. Consciousness convey the idea to you. So the consciousness is really the parent of all creation. And that is the part we all neglected of ourselves. Now we know ourselves for the ego. Now for instance, the space people have cultivated themselves or developed themselves from that point of consciousness, using their minds as an instrument, and let you go on a little further in this manner. Well, what does the TV do? We select the station. We know what we want. We want music, we want entertainment, or we want a prize fight, or a wrestling match, or sports. We didn't choose the station that these things are coming in on. We turn the set on, and there they're coming. Where is it coming from? Well, in the early days when the radio first came into being, they called it radio ether waves, coming on the ether waves. Well, the same today with the TV. In other words, they're broadcasting in New York, and here you are, a couple of hundred miles away, we say, 3,000 miles away, clear across the country, and you're receiving it there. How? On the ether wave. What is that set doing? That set is inhaling, actual inhaling of the ether wave on that particular frequency of that station that was assigned to it. And as it inhales that ether wave, the picture is shown then on the screen. That picture must remove itself for the next picture to be shown, and down the line till finally the whole show is showing. See? If that picture, first one appearing on the screen, would stand there, would not remove itself, by we call exhaling yourself, well, the set would have a short in it and probably burn up. But so long as that set is inhaling that ether wave, and what's on that frequency will express itself up on the screen, that picture must remove itself for the next picture to be shown, and down the line till finally the whole show is showing. See? If that picture, first one appearing on the screen, would stand there, would not remove itself, by we call exhaling yourself, well, the set would have a short in it and probably burn up. But so long as that set is inhaling that ether wave, and what's on that frequency will express itself up on the screen, inhaling and exhaling, that set is operating perfectly. Shut it off, the set is dead, is non-intelligent. But while it's operating, you can learn something from it. See? But it must be inhaling and exhaling that ether wave. All right? You stop breathing, and you'll be dead too. You're not no different than that TV set. And if you inhale and do not exhale, you'll be dead too. So you must inhale and exhale to keep on living as you are. So you see, you're not much different. And you choose the station that you want the information from. You choose according to your want. Your mind tunes in on a certain thought or a certain frequency, and that frequency finally begins to flow through your being by the process of breathing, inhaling, and exhaling. And you express that channel. See? You can go up and down a scale. So the mind is no different than the TV set. And the mind itself doesn't carry this. Only is a channel to which it comes through you. Selector of the frequency, and then what's on that frequency comes through it. So we have an instrument. If we don't believe each other, we at least can study the instrument and study ourselves with it. And we soon find out how we work. Yet that ether wave, or that channel, it does not come by any one line. It spreads out suddenly all over the world. It was measured in the early days when radio came on first, that if you were talking on a mic before the last breath of the sound that you were given off was exhausted from your lips, that the sound went around the world 7 times already. That's how fast it spreads. That's why you can pick up these things anywhere and anywhere, any part of the world. Well, that's fast. But your consciousness is even faster than that. And you can tune in on the different wavelengths of different things that are happening anytime you want to and know what you want to know. For example, myself. I know a lot of these things. I used to have a lot of books. I haven't got a book of any kind home. I write books, but I don't read them no more. Why should I be lugging with a bunch of junk, so to speak, because it would be junk to me, when I can tune in on any of these wavelengths and get what information I need. And the information that comes to me, I have to judge whether it's right or not also. So you've got to school your mind to judge constructively, make analysis properly. Because like a jigsaw puzzle, every piece fits into the proper place. You may pick up a piece here and put it here, and it won't fit here, it won't fit there, it won't fit there, it won't fit there, and you might throw it away. And then when you're ready to finish the picture, piece is missing, then you're in a hell of a fix. You haven't got it complete. So you keep them, because you picked up something wrong at the moment. See? Lay it aside. Go on working with the idea, and pretty soon you'll have a place for that one that you didn't have a place for a moment ago. So you can get anything you want. That's what it's meant. Know thyself, and you shall know all things, because you won't have to have a big library or have reference books or things like that, because these are all effects you're dealing with. You go to the cause. When you know the cause, you also will know the effect, and it'll fit in, because everything can fit in, fits into a pattern. There's nothing separate from the other. Everything fits in, and you've got to be a logical reasoner and logical analyzer if you're going to succeed at all. And above all, you must have faith or confidence in yourself. For if you have no confidence and faith in yourself on whatever you're doing, and don't expect the other fellow accepting your ideas either, because the other fellow is different. Everybody is different. There are no two people alike, and no two people think alike. So then you have to make your own decisions. It's what you want, what you want to learn, what you want to do, and go ahead and do it. You've got to have confidence in yourself, or faith in yourself. Because if you don't have faith in yourself, even if you do believe in God, how could you have faith in God? And if you don't believe in yourself and go for a job someplace even, and you get shaky because you're not sure that you're going to be able to, that they're going to accept you or you're going to get that job, well, the fellow detects you right away, he says, I can't use you. But if you have faith and confidence in yourself without aggression, just natural situation, you'll always succeed. Because the real self of you, the consciousness, will always guide you in the right direction if the mind will let itself to be guided. But that one does not make any mistakes. Sometimes the thoughts come to you from that source that are contrary to the way of life that you've been accustomed to live. But don't forget that we are living in traditions and conventions better than 5,000 years old that have been handed down from generation to generation. The moment a child is born, they throw that blanket on them. And then the grandpa, great-grandma, and great-grandfather, and great-aunt, and all the other aunts and everything, everybody throws their blanket on it. Pretty soon the child is suffocating under these blankets and is no longer free. Everybody wants the child to be like me, and the child is independent, different. So then you grow up about, say, around 20, 30 years of age, or maybe a little older, then you begin to see the picture of life as it's moving, as it moves throughout the world, and you begin to see, well, it could be better. I feel it could be better. That's something genuine in you trying to tell you this is not exactly right. So you start searching, and you go through all kinds of religious groups thinking you're going to find it there, even in the schools and everywhere you don't find it. You may go to school and learn to read and write, mathematics and so forth, but still you are searching. And you'll be searching as long as you will not recognize, as you will not recognize the consciousness of yourself, because that's the other half part, that's the other half. Because man said, well, a man was created perfect. Well, if he was created perfect, he wouldn't have sinned or fallen. That'd be impossible. God is perfect, he didn't fall, if we use it that way. If a man was created perfect, he wouldn't have fallen either. But he never was created perfect. He's now working towards the perfection. And the proof is this, that the consciousness may be perfect, but the man, as he manifests an effect of consciousness, is not perfect because he's learning. He has to learn, even though he makes mistakes and so forth. If he takes those mistakes as a teacher or a guide for correction, that next time he acts on the same thing, he'll do it a little bit better, then he's learning. But so long as man is learning, he's not perfect. For a perfect man wouldn't have to learn anything. You would all have it already. So we might say that he's only half developed. He's in the process of creation right now by learning. And half developed, I say, and half recognized, because he's mentally recognized as a man, 100% ego, personality. But who recognizes him or who recognizes himself? For the conscious character who supports that ego and that mind. Very few people do, and that's the real part of the man. That's the part that goes on eternally. And the other, the effects come and go. That's why you find a lot of people say, well, when you're dead, like everything else. You don't see any future. Well, even judge from the effect. All effects, when they go, they go. Another effect will take its place, but it will not be anything identical like the one that just passed on. The whole life in the cosmos, we may say that the cosmic life, which is the eternal side of life, is like a kaleidoscope. You put two items in the kaleidoscope. Turn it all you want to, fast or slow. Every time the two items come in contact with each other, they produce a different design or pattern. Never the same. Similar, but never the same. And we might say that this whole system, and that's what eternity is made up of, this whole system in constant state of action, the cosmos, and producing new conditions all the time, faster than a split second, new conditions coming in all the time. And by that very law, it supports itself in the internal state. Soon as it quits doing that, that'll be the end of all. And even the end, when you stop to think, you know, when a reason proper, when you say an end, what do you mean? Something non-existent. And if there was something non-existent, you couldn't speak of it. Couldn't find ways to express it because you'd have nothing to go by to label it. So even the end, if there was an end, that end must be supported by something else. And that something else is then admitted is greater in strength and everything else than the end itself. And you keep on going and going that way forever. I went with a bunch of students, went down, we didn't abuse the idea to where we disregarded God or anything like that. But because it's not a sin, not a crime, to search for truth. So we went down and actually done away with the Creator, with any form of intelligence, done away altogether mentally, see? And got down to such a minute particle left that we could conceive, the minutest that we could conceive, that it would take 2 million time magnification to see it. That's how small we got to. And by God, in that we found all-inclusive intelligence govern the whole system of the cosmos and the power to move it. And go the other way is the same thing. You just can get down to something that is absolutely nothing. The moment you say the word nothing, it already says something. Because if there was an absolute non-existence of something, you couldn't say it. Because you wouldn't know what to say, how to name it. So you see, anything that is in existence, whether you understand or not, that you become aware of, is somewhere. Or that which is non-existent, you could never think of. It would never come to your mind. You would never be alerted to anything. Because that which is not, that's all. So whatever comes to you may not understand it at the time, but whatever comes to your mind is in existence somewhere. And one of these days, you're going to face it. Because if you weren't going to face it, you wouldn't become alerted to it. So you'll be alerted sometime 20 years ahead before you really face it. Like people in New York been planning last 20 years to go to California and vice versa. They planned it so much that finally they landed in California, see? But took 20 years planning or so-called or expectation, see? But since that was their destiny, they finally wound up in California. See? Anything that comes to your mind consciously will eventually be realized by you. Maybe not right away, but in 10, 20 years, it will be. I'm an old man. I wrote my first book when I was 65. They say you're no good after 65, or you some of them after 50. But I'm enjoying my best of my life right now. I have never had it so good and enjoyed life so much as I did past 60. So never let anything like that bother you, because these traditions and conventions have been brought in this way. At a certain age, you're supposed to die or retire in some dirt pile, see? And Gabriel Bowser's horn will wake you up eventually, and you're supposed to jump out of there like a jackrabbit and start going jumping around once more. But Gabriel might forget. So you better be looking out for yourself. See? At the same time, these conventions, you take those traditions and conventions that constantly we worship. 5,000 years ago, they've been been brought into existence, and have been passed on generation after generation. Now let us say that the prophets of the old have made good prophecy, and some have come true, and some are going to come true, and all of that. But the method of application that they had, say, 2,000 years ago, is no longer can serve us, because we have advanced that much in knowledge and ideas, and the principle remains the same. Like, for instance, well, transportation of goods from one place to another. Well, first by a horse, by a camel, and so on. Finally, a wheel was invented, then by an ox cart. The principle is the same, but notice that today we transport commodities by air. See how we've grown? Now we've hung on to the traditions of an ox cart, we wouldn't have the planes today. We overlook that the principle remains with us, but that principle keeps expanding and improving, like it did from the ox cart to the aeroplanes, and the aeroplanes into space finally, with craft that we never thought we could build or travel. They say, well, there's no air up there. Don't forget that there's no such a thing as total emptiness of anything. Wherever, whatever we call space is full of something. You might not be able to see it. The space between you and I, right now, you don't see. Only emptiness. But what is it? It's composed of 15 pounds per square inch. Pressure. You're built in with it and you don't feel it. But it's here. Let somebody come up here with a pump and withdraw this air that's in this room. See what will happen to you. Your 15-pound pressure inside of you will begin to expand and you'll draw up like a balloon. All you have to do is take a gallon can and withdraw the air from the inside of the can, which is 15-pound pressure in that can too. Soon as you withdraw that air within that can, the air from outside would collapse and just crush it together. You will begin to see then what you're living in, what a great pressure you're living in. The space is the same way. In a lighter degree, we call no air, when we mean refined air. Is air everywhere? What is air? Nobody knows, except you feel the breeze of it like the wind or something like that. You really don't know what it is. We know what it's composed of right here, oxygen and so forth, but it's composed of the same. And we do know we have three kinds of oxygen. We got what they call number six, seven, and eight. According to some of our scientists today, eight is very rarefied air, oxygen. You couldn't live on it, but it can be reduced and brought down to where you can live it on. We one time thought that the air could not be frozen. Well, we have frozen air. In other words, the invisible become invisible by man's own process. And the man works the same way, and yet man didn't discover this because of his mind so much. He discovered it because of his consciousness conveying the ideas to him. Like Marconi did, Steinmetz, Einstein. Now that you take Steinmetz, what has he done? Look at the remarkable things he's done in his lifetime. That he says, here, we give you so many dollars a year. He said, I don't want no money. So they give him the free check. He could write his own check out at any time. They knew that he was going to write a $1 million check or any time. So any time he wanted money, he had a check on the firm and he write it out whatever he needed. But he constantly was working in the abstract field to bring about the things, the effects that he did. Another one, we might say, Edison. Read Edison's biography. And you will find that he worked in the laboratory. The more he worked his mind, tried to do it with his mind, the more confused he became. Till he gets so doggone tired, like he said, he just walk out of the lab, lock it up, and get out in the park and maybe feed a few pigeons and put a pipe in their loader with tobacco and smoke and forget all about it. Just when his mind wasn't working, was neutral, the consciousness gave him the answer. He'd go to the lab and finish the job. Again, on consciousness he depended, not on his mind. He used his mind as a tool, but the consciousness was the director and the intelligence that told him what to do. And all these entity ideas that you've been hearing about sometimes, that you hear the still small voice in you, or some messages coming to you, as some people call it, is really your consciousness talking to your mind. That's why the great book said, have no false gods before me. There's only one. That's why even Jesus said, which we don't abide by, he says, call no man your master, not even Christ, for there's one which is your Father in heaven. And that Father is that consciousness. Without consciousness, man can not do anything, not even navigate his own body. When he becomes conscious, he becomes a dead man. And that's what we have neglected. We exalted the mind, but we never promoted the conscious nor acknowledged it, and it's about time. So we've been living as a half man. Now we're coming to the other half, and that is the half that really caused the other people on other planets to advance as far as they did. And once we begin to acknowledge the real thing, the real creator back of ideas and effects, then we'll advance just as quick. And the puzzles that today puzzle us, or the impossible that we think of impossible, will become possible. Because there's nothing impossible. Nothing. And that's what we deal with when we deal with science of life. We deal with that. Now, anybody have any kind of a faith, it doesn't necessarily that they have to give up the faith to study it. Any more than your son must give up his religion to be studying for engineering in the university. But it may enlighten you on your own religion or your own faith that you may benefit more from it by understanding it better, by understanding the laws that are underlying it. Those are things. And where I might as well speak of this too. On the 17th of day, of December, I'll be going to Mexico. We're establishing big school on there in this line. This will not deal with any, with just one thing. Because supposing we have a child here that's got a talent to be a violinist, we develop the talents with it because consciously we will awaken them, and then that child can bring forth the talent for which he's best fitted for. Instead of following my daddy's footsteps, daddy's a doctor and the son has to be a doctor when the son may be better a baseball player. And he likes that better and he could succeed in that much better than following father's footsteps. See? So we can develop individual talents with the understanding what is back of it all. It can depend on that. And we're going down there to look over a big piece of property that's been offered us for the school. And the Mexican government wants the school there. And I know quite a number of professors at the University of Mexico, one of the finest universities here in our hemisphere. Students from all over the world go there. Of course, it's cheaper too than anywhere else. You can live up 3 months on the amount of money that it takes you to live on one month here. So students haven't got too much money, go there. But their study and their education is right up to par. And people come from all over. So we have some of the professors there that will help us out with other things once we do open up the school there. And I won't know much about it because I don't want to have any strings tied to it where I'd be a slave onto something like that. No dictation. If they want to give it us on the basis of free state that we can do what we think is right, that's fine. So the Science of Life will probably have a school after the first year opening up in Mexico and also one probably in California. We already partially started there. And he'll teach everything that today is being taught with the background of consciousness that you know what you're working from. Work from the real trunk of the tree into the branches instead of land on the branches and you don't know how strong the branches and you might break down with you and fall down and crack your head. Okay? Start up with the trunk and you've got a solid foundation. Like I've been said, don't build your house on a shifting sand. Storm come along and knock it off. But build it on a rock. And no matter what kind of storm come along, it'll be there when the storm is over. You know, we should follow the trend, the idea of flexibility as well as freedom from all things that the willow tree does. You know, oak tree, good storm comes along and the oak tree will stand up there and say, come on, knock me down, man. Next thing you know, it's uprooted with roots and all, or cracked right off in half. But the willow tree is flexible enough. It said, way down to the ground, almost lay it on the ground. And you think it's all ruined, but my God, this storm is over in the willow tree there, standing like nothing happened because it was flexible and gift with things. Didn't resist them or didn't try to fight them. So we get that way, we'd be living many more years than we do now, and we'll not have the sickness that we have because tension will produce sickness, worries, and all those things. The reason why we get gray-headed sometimes prematurely because we worry too much, maybe about others instead of ourselves or by ourselves, about ourselves, see? But life cannot die, like I said last night, and death did not come by your creator. That creator cannot die. He keeps on creating. That's why Jesus says that death came by man, so must life come by man. As soon as we recognize life, we'll have it. Of course, I wouldn't want this body to go on for 1,000 years, because in 1,000 years, we're going to be pretty badly worn down. And if I'm going to have fun in life, I'll have to have new instruments, new body to play with. Old body can't do a good job once it get down to a certain stage. But I want a new body just like home.
heck, you get rid of one house, you're looking for a better house. Until the better house with commodities and utilities and so forth that will now be serving you better than the old house, so you leave the old house alone, don't you? You're going to get a new one and with all the nice conveniences that the old one didn't have. So you learn from one body to another just what the next stage or what kind of body you want. Now you're ready for the better body or the better house. You just move out of one into the other. But you as a consciousness cannot die. You couldn't die if you wanted to. You can destroy your mind, you can destroy your body, but that which built that body in the first place will go on and build another one. And that's the real you. So get yourself acquainted mentally with the real you, the conscious part of yourself, and you'll soon understand yourself and understand others and all life around you. And you'll begin to enjoy it. And for the first time, you'll begin to realize that you really are living in the real heaven. Where now, what you don't understand bothers you and disturbs you, and because you don't understand it, and sometimes you do things against yourself because not knowing how to apply the law. But the law is very free. You're like this man here that's furnishing the electricity here for this building. You can use it for TV, you can use it for a tape recorder, you can use it for everyone you want it. And you're supposed to use it for that. Enjoy it. But you're not supposed to put your finger in the socket when it's on or when you're in the bathtub. If you do, the fella that generates this power knows nothing about it. The law that's involved in this electricity will take care of you on that. Will shock you, or burn you, or kill you. In other words, you committed the wrong. You transgressed the law, and she paid you off right away. And don't wait very long. Pay off right away. So that's the same thing with all life. We should go to work and learn the laws and use them rightly. And if we use them rightly, we'll be enjoying life. But if we use them wrongly, we're naturally going to get the repercussions. Because there's effect for every cause. No matter what you do, if you apply it wrong, well, then you get a wrong reaction. But even then, when you're smart, you wouldn't consider it wrong altogether. You say, well, I just applied it wrong. I've learned now that I'll have to do it some other way and go ahead and learn from it and do it next time a little better. Because all wrongs are like a teacher. If you didn't know it, well, then you had to do it anyway, so you did it wrong. But that wrong now is your teacher taught you to do it right way next time you do it again. So never condemn yourself for anything that you might do wrong first time. Just say, well, I've learned from it. Next time I'll do it better. So that's what Mrs. spoke of. That's the science of life that we're working with. And we got that mostly from the brothers. We asked them, how did they develop, what steps they have taken to develop themselves and know what they know today that we don't know. And this is what they told us. And when it analyzed carefully, it fits in with all the other teachings, except we did not promote them. We left it to the gods or something like that, that when we die, we'll meet that somewhere else instead of using it here. And it's here where we're supposed to use it.